The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but how can anyone believe in God when people get killed, literally murdered, in his name? Take a look at the Fort Hood massacre of last week. And even though it was done by a Muslim, isn't Christianity just as violent of a religion as Islam, you're asking? No, it is not. How's that for a blunt answer? We could use some bluntness in the sea of whitewashing and political correctness plaguing our media. And I have a very blunt guest who will be talking about militant Islam today. We're going to bring her on in just a few minutes. It's good to be back with you. Last week, KCBQ ran a repeat broadcast because I was out of town on a speaking engagement. So welcome to a brand spanking new live show. You know, a couple of days ago, I was actually interviewed by the San Diego Union-Tribune for the purpose of responding to an atheist-sponsored billboard. Here's a brief excerpt from their article of Thursday, November the 12th. It says, "Don't believe in God?" the billboard asks, atop a background of blue sky and white clouds. "You are not alone. We hope the message will get everyone thinking," said Debbie Allen Schumer, coordinator of the San Diego Coalition of Reason, an umbrella organization for nine groups of non-believers. "Some people will have a negative reaction to the sign, and others will be inspired to check it out." Okay, that's a brief excerpt of the article. And here's a part where I jump into the scene. It says, "Bob Siegel, a member of Skyline Church in La Mesa and a self-described Christian apologist, said he doesn't find the billboard offensive. But I do see a double standard from the atheists," he said. "They can put up a sign like that, but during Christmas, if a manger goes on public land, they act like their civil liberties are being taken away." Siegel added, "It's not unreasonable to believe in God, and it's a myth that people who do so are guided by blind faith. There are many good reasons to believe." Okay, that's the only part of the article that featured me, and of course, I did not make such a comment without a willingness to back it up. I gave out my website and assured the reporter that people can find archived articles defending the existence of God from a rational, intellectual point of view. It might have been nice if this portion of the interview had not been conspicuously omitted. No matter, let me make it clear again right now. If you want to see and read evidence for God's existence, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Bob Siegel, that's SIEGEL.net. And click into the subsection entitled Answers for Skeptics. Meanwhile, the following email response was received at Skyline Church the same day as the newspaper publication from Jim. I'm withholding his last name. Jim writes, "Please tell Bob Siegel he is missing the point, or more likely, intentionally ignoring it, when he compares the San Diego Coalition of Reason billboard to a nativity scene. I have yet to hear of anyone seriously protesting the holiday billboards that remind people that Christmas began as a religious holiday. What some people do find objectionable is the placement of religious images on property supported by public tax money, since the government is not supposed to support any particular religious belief." That's from Jim. Well, actually, Jim, I appreciate the email, but I am not missing the point at all. The Establishment Clause in our Constitution merely protects you from mandated religion. It does not say that the government can't support a particular religion. Nobody's forcing you to become a Christian by putting up a symbol. And in the days of our forefathers, religious symbols were on public property all the time. All the time. So we can see rather clearly how they interpreted their own First Amendment, can't we? what the Constitution meant to them, what the Constitution meant to our forefathers, is what the Constitution means, period. As for tax dollars, Jim, I am sympathetic to your position. I really am. But consider this. Our tax dollars go for many things, and none of us are happy about all the distributions. My own tax dollars, for instance, fund public schools and some public universities where the teachings are incompatible with Christianity at the very least, and downright hostile at the very most to Christianity. Interesting how this separation between church and state never cuts both ways, isn't it? On the other hand, should a school put up a Christmas decoration or should a county build a manger scene, your tax dollars do not go up specifically for that, but remain the same. Besides, although there are always exceptions, I have seen vast evidence that this goes beyond the issue of taxes in the minds of many atheists. Take a look, just for an example, at the decades-old controversy surrounding Mount Soledad's cross right here in San Diego. This was built originally to be a World War II memorial. Everybody knows that, yes, it includes a cross, because in the aftermath of World War II, most people and all vets were buried with a cross or had a cross as part of the memorial. Atheists knew full well that Mount Soledad was not any kind of government mandate toward a particular religion, and yet they still wanted to take the cross down. While debating an atheist on my own radio show a couple of years ago, I asked him what harm the cross was causing, inasmuch as he can merely turn away if he does not want to look at it. We don't have laws that say you have to climb to Mount Soledad and worship at the cross. He replied, well, Bob, that cross might make people think we have a national religion. You see my point, people? Now they want to pass laws based upon what people might think. Add the fact that some individuals have made attempts to purchase Mount Soledad, making it private property instead of public property, and they were still met with resistance. Finally, I have heard many atheists use as their ultimate reason, I find these symbols offensive. Well, guess what? Free speech offends. Why did the Constitution bother to protect free speech if speech were always going to be benign and not rattle anybody's cage? And now I'd like to introduce a woman who I suspect probably does rattle cages. Filmmaker and best-selling author, Carol Matriciana, is a well-known expert on ancient and modern world religions, contemporary cults, paganism, and the occult. Best-selling author, journalist, researcher, and commercial artist, Carol has co-produced or contributed research and expertise to more than 55 documentaries in the past 30 years. Carol, welcome to our program.
Oh, thank you so much. Welcome to your incredible opening. That was a very, very welcome opening and well-spoken. And
well, thank you. In fact, before we get on to our main subject, do you have any comments yourself when people put up billboards like that or get all freaked out when there's a manger scene or a cross? What would you say to an atheist?
I mean, that's why I make films. And by the way, since that we've got now gone up to about 62 documentaries, some of our documentaries are actually on Christmas, the unwrapping of Christmas, and Halloween, because we do take issue about, for instance, as you said, they take religion out of school, saying that you can't have the Bible in the classroom, you can't have the Ten Commandments there, you can't tell children about supposedly religion. But the religion is based on Christian religion or Bible-based religion, but in the classroom, the teacher can read aloud Harry Potter. And Harry Potter, we made a movie on that some years ago, Harry Potter, Witchcraft Repackaged, which is a religion, and if people say, no, it isn't, well, then the IRS have made it a tax-exempt religion. The Supreme Court has ruled it a religion. They've got Wiccan or witchcraft. That's the name for witchcraft.
Oh, witchcraft is rampant
in the military. So here we have a religion that is read aloud by the teacher in the classroom in the Harry Potter books, and then people would say, oh, well, that's only fantasy. No, it's not.
Well, and Carol, don't they still have Halloween costume parties? And yet Halloween was originally All Hallows Eve, a coven night for witches.
It's the witch of the pagans' new year. Halloween is the beginning of the pagans' new year, and whether the pagans include Satanists, because people don't seem to understand that paganism is the sort of umbrella, if you will, just as Christianity is the name or the umbrella over all sorts of denominations that fall under it, from Catholicism to Mormonism to Jehovah's Witnesses. I mean, all these various different religious groups call themselves Christian groups. And so, you know, we have to define what is that? What is biblical Christianity? How does the religion based on the Bible differ from man-made traditions or religions that have a leader, a prophet who has redefined certain teachings? So,
yeah, and it's that time of the year, of course, when people who may object to talking about Christmas in school are not going to object to taking the holiday off. But it's kind of like kids, we're going to take off this holiday, but it's a secret. And yet we just passed Harvey Milk Day here in California, where I'm just positive beyond a shadow of a doubt that every year on Harvey Milk Day, the children will be carefully instructed about exactly the meaning of this holiday.
Are you serious?
They just passed Harvey Milk Day just a couple of months ago, actually less than a couple of months ago, and Arnold Schwarzenegger signed it, Harvey Milk Day, the gay activist. And you can bet your bottom dollar that they will be teaching kids the meaning of this holiday every year.
That they will be taught about the homosexual agenda,
yeah, they'll
right?
be taught about that. And see, that's why it's so interesting. People always talk about separation between church and state, which a phrase that's not in our Constitution anyway. But even if it were, isn't it interesting that the separation never works both ways? People can teach all kinds of things just hostile to the Bible, and they don't mind our tax dollars going to pay for things we don't want our children hearing, but then nobody can ever say anything positive about the Bible or Jesus. It's absolutely maddening.
Yes, well, there you go. You see, our tax dollars were busing children during the Harry Potter premieres all over the nation. Our tax dollars were busing children to go and see the movies that were being played in the cinema, the books of which were read aloud in the classroom by the teachers, which was recommended at one point. It was required reading.
Well, I guess they got around that by saying that this is fiction. But then there are people who are real, honest-to-goodness witches, and for them it is not fiction.
Yes, exactly. And going and just calling it fiction, saying Harry Potter is fiction, that doesn't mean to say that people do not believe in fiction. When we were making our documentary Harry Potter, Witchcraft Repackaged, it just so happened round about that time that I was in England, where J.K. Rowling is, of course, an English author, and she has based a lot of her characterization on real fixtures in England. For instance, Harry Potter takes the train from King's Cross Station, which is a real station in London, and there he gets his make-believe train that takes him to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry by running through, by taking it from platform 9 3/4, which doesn't exist. Platform 9 exists, platform 10 exists. But meanwhile, when I was there, there was a rope cordoning off the areas in the middle, and I asked the station master why there was this rope, and he said, because children from all over the world came to run through this brick wall,
oh, isn't
hoping
it interesting?
It would take them to Harry's School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. So how does, when people say, well, children, it's only fantasy and children don't believe it, why then are they running through brick walls hurting themselves to go to the same school? And J.K. Rowling herself said she got thousands of emails from children that wanted to go to the same school as Harry, and could they enter?
Well, certainly some of them are believing it. Okay, Carol, hold with me over the break. My special guest, Carol Matriciana. We will be right back to talk about militant Islam. Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound.
My guest today is Kara Matriciana, filmmaker, best-selling author, and she's contributed or produced 62 documentaries. I had said 55. She's already surpassed her own bio. If you'd like to weigh in on any of this, Carol is an expert on the cults and false religions. We're going to particularly talk about Islam, but you can weigh in on this maybe with a question for Carol. 1-888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170, toll free. Carol, welcome back to our show.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Well, let's back up a little bit and just, I'd like to hear your testimony, how you got involved with Christianity and what led you into the very interesting ministry that you're involved with.
Well, actually, I was born and raised in India. I was fifth generation born in India.
Oh, no kidding. Were you there at the time of Mahatma Gandhi? Were you there around that same time?
Sorry?
Were you there around the same time as Mahatma Gandhi?
I'm not quite that old.
Well, I meant as a little child, of course.
Grandparents were, yes.
Your grandparents were, okay.
Yeah. And, of course, with the whole partition away from the British, when that happened, the choice was that any of the British that were there could either continue and stay or move on. And so my father stayed on in the company that he was in for another 20 years, which is when my sister and I and our family continued to live there. So I had many Hindu friends, Muslim friends, all sorts of different denominations of Christian friends, various different schisms of Hinduism and Buddhism. So I grew up with a sort of mishmash knowledge of a lot of spirituality. And interestingly enough, my own background was that I was raised as a Roman Catholic, a very devout Roman Catholic, sent to convent and so went to Mass every day, three times on Sundays, and very devout involvement, which... An interesting thing about Roman Catholicism is that whatever culture it's in, it sort of absorbs the culture into its own religion. So Roman Catholicism of America may be quite different to the Roman Catholicism of India or Africa or South America, which is, you know, much more, it absorbs much more of the voodoo, sankria, sort of leanings, tendencies, if you will. So the mystical aspects of the Roman Catholic Church I grew up with, actually, without my even realizing, opened me up to have a terrific tendency leaning towards Eastern mysticism, so that by the time the Beatles had come into our culture and introduced everybody to Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and other various aspects of yoga meditation, and of course hair was on the scene in those days, the musical hair that sang about yoga and drug inducement. When all these things came, I was actually really, I'd already been opened up to accept becoming a very easy target, if you will, for the New Age movement. And without my even realizing it, I became a New Ager, a westernized Hindu, a witch, if one wants to call it. In those days, of course, these weren't terms that, you know, one sort of got involved in.
Term did they use for a witch in those days?
I don't even think that...
did they talk more just about powers in a neutral way?
Natural environmentalism. It was sort of considered nature worship. I mean, just a tendency towards nature. And we didn't even realize that was the beginnings. I mean, that the people that worship nature are very open to nature worship are indeed Wiccans, but it hadn't sort of come out into the fashion, if you will, even though in the 50s, Alexandrian witchcraft was rampant in England, but it was still undercover, so to speak, much like... let's say, you know, Rock Hudson, who was a homosexual. It just wasn't out in the open. I mean, people that were in the know knew these things, but homosexuality hadn't come out of the closet, so to speak, and neither had witchcraft.
Yeah, I guess it just wasn't as popular, and a lot of our European countries in England were much more Judeo-Christian at that time.
Well, yes, yes. It just,
or at least they leaned that way morality-wise.
Just witchcraft hadn't come out of the broom closet, you know.
That's right, like that. Hadn't come out of the broom closet.
It was just...
Okay, so you were inundated with these things, and how did you end up finding the Lord? How did you end up finding...
Well, actually, I had a modeling job in Chicago, and I had got introduced to... the American Jesus movement had quite a huge impact in the late 60s, and a lot of people were sort of talking about Jesus and Bible and all those kind of things, which wasn't really outspoken about in England so much. And I got taken to a little Bible study, which I didn't even know was a Bible study, in Chicago in those days, and that's how I got introduced for the first time in my life to an actual Bible and people reading the Bible, because within our my Catholic background, we really weren't allowed to read the Bible without a priest or the interpretation of the priest, or indeed it was a Catholic Bible if it was even read, and people don't understand that there's a difference between the Catholic Bible and the Orthodox, the Greek translation, better Bible, because... I mean, we just presumed we were Christians. I thought I was a Christian, even though I was a practicing occultist, a yogi practitioner, a drug taker. I was promiscuous, but when I was asked that evening how long I'd been a Christian, I said all my life, because I truly thought I was a Christian, even though I was involved in occultism and had no idea. And it wasn't until I was asked that evening, well, when did you accept Jesus Christ as your personal savior? And because I had never heard that question before, the young man who'd been leading the Bible study led me through the sinner's prayer, and I just had the most wonderful, wonderful awakening that evening, born again experience filled with a Holy Spirit and a knowledge of what Jesus had done for me on the cross, with me admitting that I was a sinner. And it just changed my life. And because I'd come from so many different religious backgrounds and knew so many friends and people, it was sort of the Lord just led me into the ministry I'm in today. I came from, a modeling background, but I was also I'd majored in art and had been in a graphic design background. So that sort of led me straight into video journalism. And I was the other side of the camera putting together information on helping people understand all the different schisms, isms, which very soon are all going to be wasms.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because it seems like the rights of Christians in this country and in Europe are being systematically removed.
Absolutely, yes. It's much more the whole climate in moving us towards the one world religion, where there has to be an apathy and a tolerance for all religions being the same, whereas biblical Christianity has very definite boundaries of truth and salvation and sin, and this is not compatible with the one world religion that has got to take place, as the Bible says. So we are going through a conditioning process, the numbing of our minds. And
right.
We can see it, for instance, you know, we're not allowed to, in government positions, you've got people that will not speak sympathetically and overtly about Christianity, and yet Obama can stand there supporting Islam, calling himself not only a Muslim, giving his testimony, his background in Islam.
Okay, Carol, hold with me over the break, please, and we will be right back. My guest, Carol Matriciana. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. I'm here with Carol Matriciana, best-selling filmmaker and author. So, Carol, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Bob.
You were talking about your testimony, and I guess the best word that describes the hodgepodge of different religious and drug-related experiences that you went through is you sure didn't miss the 60s. But isn't it interesting that you were mentioning before we went to the break that you were involved in all these religions that really contradict themselves, and yet you didn't see a contradiction. I think there are many listening right now who would relate to that. A lot of people would look at what Christians teach and what Hinduism teaches, and of course Hinduism is what's become repackaged as New Age, and they'll say, oh, it doesn't matter. All these, what do you say to somebody who says that all these religions are true?
Well, that is the difficulty. You see, we have to get back to defining things. So what you have to do is ask, what is true? And, you know, people say, well, your truth is your truth and my truth is my truth. Well, the problem with all of that is then, you know, let's say we take a mathematician who's going to build or an architect who's going to build a building and say, oh, well, look, the way that you add up 2 and 2 is your truth and the way I add up 2 and 2 is my truth. Well, one would get a crooked house.
And we'd fire him on the spot.
There has to be a foundation for what is truth. And Jesus Christ said, I am the way and the truth. So there is apparently a truth that will set you free. So the question is, what does it set us free from? We're born as sinners. We're told that the wages of sin is death, and we are all susceptible to death. We have all got to die. So that is the truth that Jesus Christ has come to set us free from death, so that in believing in him, we can have eternal life through his sacrifice on the cross. So now if one goes to all these other religions being true, well, then you have to say what? Well, maybe your experience is true, your feelings are true, that's the difficulty, and that's the difference. The Bhagavad Gita and various other Muhammad's teachings in the Quran, none of these can be objectively looked against, measured against history, whereas the Bible has got over 800 prophecies that point to Jesus Christ. One just has to look at the history. Architecture proves the truth of the Bible. Science proves the truth of the Bible. The Bible is an authentic book of truth which points to Jesus Christ being the truth that can set us free, because all, you know, one just has to look at the history that makes up truth. So I usually try and just get people to talk through things, and a Hindu will tell you that they absolutely don't believe in resurrection. Their idea is that death is going to be procrastinated. They do believe that they're going to die, but they believe that their spirit or their soul is going to pass into another body, and depending how good they've been in this life or the life before or the life before that, depends how they're going to come back. But they have no way of knowing what their behavior was like in the life before and before and before, as to what they're going to come back as. So it is a very cruel idea. Reincarnation is extremely cruel, and Gandhi himself said that it's a hopeless cycle that keeps the soul imprisoned. And for this very reason that Christians get involved in Eastern mysticism, yoga, Hinduism. By the way, Hinduism and yoga are synonymous. There can be no Hinduism without yoga, and there can be no yoga without Hinduism.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't understand that. They just view yoga as some kind of exercise, and they do not understand all the religious connotations.
Exactly, and that's why I went to India a couple of years ago, back to the country of my birth, and interviewed gurus and said, look, there's this big thing in the West where Christians are calling yoga Christian yoga and doing Christian exercises, and is this possible? So we made a documentary called Yoga Uncoiled, from East to West, to help Westerners understand the theology behind yoga, and that yoga is designed to help you on your reincarnation path. Well, if a Christian believes in Jesus Christ and they know that they're going to be resurrected with Christ and live with him eternally, you don't need to go through reincarnation exercises.
Now, from the time that you became a born-again Christian to the time you got involved in your present ministry, how long was that? Did you start getting into filmmaking and writing books right away, or did you do some other things first?
Well, I got into journalism at first. What happened actually was, I did not get into it immediately. It was a step-by-step process, helping a lot of people at the time. There were the cults were proliferating in London. By the time I returned to London from America, the Hare Krishnas were going down the street, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, the guru of psychology, pop psychology, and sexual therapy, was doing well. The Children of God, Reverend Sun Myung Moon, the Moonies, all these cults were proliferating in Europe, and parents were just could not tell what was happening. And so many of them said, "Look, you know, our kids have come off drugs and have joined the Hare Krishna and are really good, haven't?" Are no longer involved in drugs. Or Jewish parents started wanting to know why their kids suddenly became Jesus freaks overnight. And so what happened was I had the opportunity of starting something to help parents, support parents and concerned grandparents and concerned people and the press to be able to understand all the differences between the cults that were growing. Jim Jones at the time, a few years before that, had led 950 people to the Kool-Aid suicide. And so there was a lot of stuff happening as people's eyes were becoming spiritually opened through drugs. And they were just getting caught into all these various cults and different aspects of religion. That's what I started. That's how I started with this ministry of helping do research and helping parents and concerned people who'd got caught in the cults. And then Time magazine called me one of the leading experts in Europe on these world religions. And so from there, it sort of grew to making movies and documentaries and writing books and to where I am today, where we've got all these various movies on Islam and yoga and Harry Potter and the supernatural powers, and et cetera, et cetera.
Carol, which of your books or documentaries are the most well-known?
Well, it's difficult to say.
I'll tell you what, put a hold in the thought on that, and we'll get back right after our break. Carol Matriciana, you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home, or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Belt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I did want to mention that I am going to be guest hosting for Rick Amato. So I will be on for a full 2 hours this Wednesday evening from 9 o'clock to 11 p.m. right here on the same station, 1170 KCBQ. Welcome back to filmmaker and best-selling author Carol Matriciana. Carol, I had asked you which of your documentaries is the most well-known. There's probably several.
Yeah, it's hard to tell because we've been trying to make one every year, and each year if they win the awards and do quite well, and because they're very topical, it becomes, the latest one almost becomes the most popular. So, for instance, the Islam Rising, A Call to One World Ummah, which won Best Documentary earlier this year, is the bestseller at the moment. Last year we did Yoga Uncoiled, went to India, and that was in response to the hundreds of thousands of Christians that are getting involved in so-called Christian yoga. And so this then came up to say, can a Christian practice yoga? My book, which just got released out of India, is tackling the idea of the emergent church. This is a huge issue among...
Oh, I've spoken out against the emergent church on this program.
Sorry?
I have spoken out against the emergent church on this program.
Well, you see, I think people just don't understand what emerging means. And emerging is something that is evolving and supposedly getting better. And so here we've got a biblical Christianity where God has been the same yesterday, today, and forever. And now apparently the powers that be are saying that they want to make it a new Christianity and change it because it needs changing, because the God that created the world didn't anticipate this postmodern culture and needs some help to be able to communicate his word to these people. So it's like, of course it has to. There has to be a religion that is emerging because it has to be the religion of the one world leader. And it's a conditioning process where all religions and all various different denominations, if you will, have got to blend together and be merged together and be told that they're apparently all compatible. And so we have mega Christian leaders that are all working towards undermining the word of God, from Rick Warren with his purpose-driven movement to, Doug Padgett, the more outspoken, Brian McLaren, the more outspoken leaders of the actual emergent church. But even there are lots of denominations, and it's very hard for Christians to sort of understand what's happening unless they compare everything to the Bible. Be like the Bereans in Acts 17 who tested everything that Paul taught to the Thessalonians. In fact, he said that the Bereans were more noble-minded than the Thessalonians because they checked everything that he taught against the scriptures daily. And that's what we as Christians need to do, check every teaching so that we can see what is false teaching, what is political teaching, what is the global teaching that is merging us into the new Christianity, which is going to be the one world religion. And Why is it going to be Christianity? Because the Lord said that the Antichrist is going to be called Christ, like Christ, one who appears to be like Christ. It's not the anti-Buddha, it's not the anti-Muhammad, it's the Antichrist. And anti is the Greek suffix meaning in place of. So it's got to be a type of Christianized new religion that blends with Hinduism, New Ageism, Islam, Sufi, Kabbalah. All of these things have to be thought of as one and compatible. So that's where we are, you know?
Well, in the time that we have left, I want to get the benefit of your expertise. Certainly one headline in religious news this week is this this killing that we had out in Fort Hood, Texas. Why don't you comment about that as somebody who, as a professional, has studied the ins and outs of Islam?
Well, Obama is being very cautious in not letting this thing be discovered or looked into. But, you know, the bottom line is that the Quran teaches every Muslim to kill those who do not believe in Allah. This is specifically written in the Quran. So when people say, well, Christians are, you know, they're fighters and they're bloody as well, they may very well be, but that is not something that Jesus Christ tells us to do. For instance, the very, very last healing that Jesus did was when Peter pulled out his sword and cut off the ear of a servant that came to a servant of the soldier that came to arrest Jesus. And Jesus says, no, it can't be done by the sword. And he picked the ear up and healed the man's ear back to his head, because this is not, Jesus's teaching is not about violence with the sword. So, but the Quran very, very specifically says that everybody must believe in Allah, the infidels must be killed, the Jews must be killed, that there is, in our movie, Islam Rising, A Call to One World Ummah, it's a four-part series, 200 minutes, where you've got former Muslims, experts in Islam, three former terrorists that tell what the teachings of the Quran are, and that out of the Quran, this man, Hassan from Fort Hood, was accurate to the Quran when he shouted Allah Akbar, great is God. It was because that's what the Quran tells them to do. They're told that the shedding of the martyr's blood, the first drop of the martyr's blood that is shed, will bring 70 of their family members into paradise. They do not believe in the atonement, that anybody can die for the sins of somebody else. So they cannot believe that Jesus Christ is the atoning, you know, that his blood went for the atonement of sins.
Now, Carol, this is very important, because you mentioned that it's in the Quran where we have these commands, and I know that chapter 9 would be one such place, but the politically correct drivel that we always hear is that primarily Islam is a religion of peace and just a few terrorists have hijacked it, but that's not your understanding of Islam, is it?
No, not at all. You see, the word Islam, and remember, I grew up in India with Muslims all around me, the word Islam in Arabic means peace, but it's not the peace of non-sword and non-violence. It's that the whole world will come under peace, which they see as Sharia law, when the whole world is submitted to Islam and Allah and Sharia, then there will be peace. So when they say it's about peace, they say, this struggle is just an inner struggle, that is not true. One just has to look at all the nations, the Muslim nations around the world, to understand that it is by the sword, as written in the Quran. They are followers of Muhammad. Now, the country that I was born and raised in, the bloodiest, absolutely worst history, bloodiest war in history was done in India, where 70 million Hindus were killed with the Islamic invasion.
Okay, now, Carol, hold with us, please, for one more segment. We will be back with Carol Matriciana. Is Islam really a religion of peace, or does the Quran command the violence? We'll be right back. Thank you. Good projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. My guest today is Carol Matriciana. Well, we've been talking about a lot of religions, but particularly keying in on Islam. Carol, do you have a website that you'd like to give out so that people can have your contact information? I'm sure many that are listening would like to get a hold of some of these books and documentaries.
Thank you, Bob. Yes, it's Carol, my name, C-A-R-Y-L, spelt in a slightly different way, C-A-R-Y-L. So it's www.carol.com. TV, like television.com, seven letters, CARYLTV.com. And there they can see, go through the shop and see all the various titles we've got. And thank you very much for plugging that. That's very
well, great. We're down to our last segment, and we'll probably be right in the middle of something when it's time to go. So I want to, ahead of time, before we continue talking, thank you for taking the time to come on our program. We'll definitely have you on again. You're just a fantastic individual and a very brave woman. Now, do I understand that you said that your documentary about Islam won an award? I would think that these days people would be afraid to give an award out because they'd be afraid of the jihad.
You know what? I think I'm blessed by those that really see the danger of Islam rising. The DVD is called A Call to One World Ummah. And Ummah means domination. And I think those that really see the rise of Islam in America are very, I'm thrilled with the way that this has been moving. This is a 200-minute, four-part series and teaches about all the various different aspects of Islam by former Muslims and by former terrorists themselves. It covers history, the mosque in America. Every state has many, many mosques. The ideology, Sharia, jihad. There are eight forms of jihad. And Dawah, the duty to conquer, which is what every Muslim has got to do here in America. So when we're told it's a religion of peace, as I was saying, that the word, the Arabic word for peace is salam. It's rather like the Hebrew word is shalom. But in this case, Islam really in Arabic means submission, surrender, subjugation.
Yeah, now that's what I had always heard, that it means submission and not peace.
So it's a sort of Islam, the word peace is the active form of salam, of peace. And a Muslim sees himself as a peacemaking force where they have to use argument, intrigue, threats, terrorism, warfare, every means possible to secure Islam as the only religion worldwide. And you see, the Muslims divide the world into two parts, two sectors. They call it the Daral Islam, the House of Islam, the House of Peace, as they call it. That those are those that have submitted or subjugated or surrendered themselves. That's Darul Islam. And then there's Darul Harb. That's the house of war. And that is all of those who will not recognize the right of any of other, you know, that they, Islam, because Islam doesn't recognize the right of any other religion or worldview to exist, they feel that this other group of people need to have war implemented on them. They are not considered to be at peace with Islam, and so they have to be terrorized. And if people could just understand that the Muslims consider themselves to be superior to others, that's actually written in the surah, that they are the best of people evolved for mankind, if you will. And then the Muslims are forbidden to befriend Jews or Christians. That, again, is in the Quran, that they must not be friends with believers. They have to enforce a penalty tax on anybody who will not submit to Islam. Now, imagine that if after 9/11, we taxed all Muslims in this country to say that because 19 of your people destroyed the Twin Towers, you have to be taxed more than the Christians in this country. Imagine the outrage. And yet in countries all over the world, those who are not Muslims have to pay a penalty tax, which is called sitya, unless they submit and become Muslims. It is absolutely incredible. It's the only religion in the world that continues with slavery. And they absolutely believe in being able to take people as possessions and booty, and they are involved in the slave trading. That's why you get the harems, where women are just kidnapped and belong to so many men. But deliberately, a man is permitted to marry four people, so a Muslim is engaged in polygamy. And in England, English law has already embraced Sharia, which is the law of Islam, and it's not only a law the way that we see it. It's not just a political constitution, so to speak. It's legal, it's economic, it's military, it's dietary, it's social, it's a system of life.
Carol, would it be fair to say when you see so many Muslims that come on TV and call themselves peaceful, would it be fair to say that one of two things is going on? Either these are nominal Muslims who were born in a Muslim country and don't know what their own Quran is teaching, or these are Muslims who are taking Muhammad at his word when he said that in a time of war, it's okay to lie, and they're portraying themselves as something that they really are not.
That's exactly it. You see, one of the jihads is the jihad of deception, the jihad of lying. It's hudna. It's what Muhammad was involved in. You are permitted to deceive the infidel. And that is why Obama was able to not say, you know, he didn't show himself to be an overt Muslim the way he is now, showing himself to be sympathetic and a Muslim and sympathetic to the things. Because when he was campaigning, he was involved in Hudna, the deception of jihad. And Muhammad thought jihad was so important that he declared it to be the second most important deed in Islam. So these people, because Islam, as I explained, is the house of, you know, means the sort of submission, surrender, they truly consider themselves to be this peace-making force. So they'll say they're peace, but it's a different kind of peace.
It's more like pieces, like a piece here and a piece there.
It's not the way that we understand freedom. You see, they just do not have that concept of freedom. It's deception.
Now, it's in chapter 9. Can you quote a few other verses from the Quran? I think it's very important for people to know that it is the Quran that's actually teaching this and not just some terrorist stuff.
No, it's the Quran teaches that it's, you know, for instance, in... And the hadith, by the way, we have to explain that the Quran and the hadith go side and side. They're both the sayings and the lives of Muhammad. And a Muslim will lift that above his eye contact, above his head. That is, you know, no Quran will be the way that we would put a Bible, let's say, you know, at table level or something. They will not do that with the Quran because this is elevated as as holy.
Okay, we are out of time. Carol, we will have you on again. Thank you so much for being
Thanks,
on our program
Bob.
Today. God bless you in your ministry. And everybody, let's pray for this courageous woman, because you just got to bet there are jihadists out there who don't like what she's saying. Pray for her protection. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.